The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Beyond and hello and welcome to IGN's weekly PlayStation show. I'm your host, Max Scoville. And this week we have some friendly new faces, who some of whom you might be familiar with, but others not so much. Khalif Adams, you might know him from Spawn on Me podcast, friend of the show. We've done shows together. I don't know if we've ever done this one, but I think you've been on this one. Anyway, you're here now. Welcome, dude.
Excited to be here. Excited to be rocking with you and excited to be back at Beyond, making it happen with all of you. Thank you so much for having me. Excited to rock.
For sure. And also Kat Bailey, IGN, high powerful news wizard, who also was regularly on NVC. Thanks for hopping on.
Hi, Max. Yes, I want news wizard to be my new title here at IGN. It's my next power level over here. And hello from Nintendo Land. I'm coming over to PlayStation because my Nintendo Switch is currently in the mail. So that's a great opportunity to play some Diablo 4 and Final Fantasy 16.
Great opportunity to hop on a PlayStation podcast. And of course, Ben Watts from IGN Social Team, who has also been on the show, but I don't think we've ever done a show together.
We haven't, but I'm intensely jealous of News Wizard. So if we can find another title that would be appropriate for me, some sort of promotion would be great.
I think we could do that. Cool. So I want to get into this. I feel like the dust has kind of settled on the big, you know, tentpole summer video game news week festival, gaming, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, in hindsight, I don't think it was a particularly good one for Sony as far as first party stuff goes. But I don't want to start on too much of a down note. So I figure we could talk about some of the cool stuff that came out of it and things that we were particularly excited about. Khalif, let's start with you. What did you check out? What got revealed? What really jumped out at you from the past couple weeks of big announcements?
I mean, there have been so many things. The Starfield Direct was a monster. That was super, super cool. I mean, I personally, as you can see behind me, was very, very excited for MK1 and got some hands-on with that, which was brilliant and amazing and super fun. One of my favorite games I got a chance to check out that really surprised me was Thirsty Suitors from Outer Loop. So there was a ton of stuff just at the show this year that I felt like really pulled together, like this year and next year are going to be some monster years for gaming. And it was just a blast being able to see everybody again and go give hugs and go get drinks and hang out with folks and check out some really fun games. So there we'll dig a little bit more into those specific games if we have time, but I think it is really, really cool to see the stuff that's kind of coming down the pipeline for us. Yeah,
totally. Kat, what was the big standout for you?
There are a couple. I think the big one for me was definitely the Ubisoft Star Wars game, Star Wars Outlaws, which we've been awaiting for quite a while to see this one. And I think it made a really good impression. And Ubisoft has been really needing a win in recent months/years. So it's great to see that it's looking terrific. I mean, it's basically what Watch Dogs 2, but with a Star Wars skin and some space combat. That's cool. I'm into it. Another bounty hunter game after kind of a long time. It looks really fun. I tend to be a little skeptical of Ubisoft games as a rule because I'm not that big of a Far Cry fan. I'm not that big of an Assassin's Creed fan. And usually when I end up actually playing them, I'm like, oh, this isn't as cool as I was expecting. But I was watching the trailer and I was like, oh, I'm into this. I'm in. So let's see what we've got. I have to say, I was a big fan of Battlefront 2. Ultimately, I like Jedi Survivor, but I'm actually really happy to see a new studio have kind of their own take on Star Wars after EA has had it for like a decade or so. So this one is going to be really interesting when it eventually comes out next year.
Yeah, for sure. Ben, you also were into Outlaws, yeah?
Oh, massively. Yeah, so I am an Assassin's Creed and a Far Cry fan. So coming from that family, I'm really excited to see exactly how this game plays, how open the world actually is, and getting and moving between that world. I know, the bike looks really cool, but like, and when we're taking off from planet to planet, but what's the exploration like? What am I going to get to see? What am I going to organically discover when I'm going through the galaxy that I will get to explore? But I think the game that I feel like we're ignoring here, which probably was the biggest one of the whole shebang, is Foam Stars. And I don't know why we're not talking about it more. Had a great showing. I can't wait to get my hands on it. And I know it sounds like I'm being facetious, and I'm only half being facetious because I am actually genuinely excited for that game. I think it just looks like a lot of fun, even if it is just a reskin.
I love that we really just jerked the wheel hard there. We got to talk about Foam Stars again. Khalif, Kat, did either of you get a chance to actually play this? Because it was playable, I think.
It was the hit of Foam the show, Stars. Right?
Yeah. Foam Stars was actually a really big surprise for me too. Like I'm with you on that, Ben. I think for me it was the thing that I came away from was like, oh, this isn't a Splatoon clone in the ways that everyone kind of just like barked at it when they saw it initially. It's actually a ton of fun. Makes you think about the way you're going to play it in a different way than you would Splatoon, and just like, it's very, really pretty. It makes me think that they should have just called it Foam Stars Ibiza. And that would have been a really good space for that thing to have landed for the marketing. But I'm really excited for it. It looks dope.
Kat, did you have any thoughts on Foam Stars? Okay.
I'm sorry to be a skeptic. I'm glad to see that it's making a good impression. But I do think that it's really, really, really hard to establish a service game in this day and age. And there have been a lot of service games that have been very well received only to close in like a year. And this seems like a case study in a game that will come out and people will go, wow, Foam Stars is pretty fun. And then everybody will kind of move on with their lives. And the next thing you know, it's like Foam Stars is shutting down its servers and moving on with their lives. And that will just be another game that's lost. It looks like fun just watching the gameplay. I love jetting around on the foam and everything. I love the aesthetic. I love the vibe, but and it was cool to see that it made such a great impression at SGF, but gosh, it's so hard these days to launch a service game. And I just don't think that Square Enix has the wherewithal or the patience to really support this one. They have this weird kind of scattershot approach to releasing and announcing and releasing games with like virtually zero marketing or all of the marketing, and Foam Stars seems it's going to be like maybe in the former category.
Yeah. No, to your point, like one of the bigger announcements, or not the bigger, one of the announcements from last year's summer game, whatever it was Rumbleverse, which didn't even make it to 1 year. I'm pretty sure. Am I correct in that? Was it Rumbleverse? Is that the one?
Yep.
Came and went.
Yep.
Yeah.
Rumbleverse were just like, was out of there pretty quickly in terms of
what's the dodgeball
being
game
shown and then gone.
Oh, Knockout
City. It was a wrestling. Oh, yeah. Knockout Kings also ended, but
Knockout Kings was gone too.
Is it Kings or? Yeah, but I mean, basically, they were. Yeah, these games. Yeah, to your point, Kat, like games as a service is like you're not selling a game. You're building a social media platform, really. And you know, I think the obvious comparison for Foam Stars, which yes, we're actually talking about Foam Stars seriously, is. You know, it looks like a Splatoon clone. And the key difference is sure, you could be like, oh, people who want to play Splatoon, but, you know, don't have a Switch or Wii U or whatever. It's also kind of trying to create demand for something that maybe there are people who are like, I feel left out not being able to play Splatoon, but I don't know who those people are. I feel like if you want to play Splatoon, you probably, yeah. And I mean, speaking, the whole reason that has a following is because the first one launched on Wii U, which didn't really have a lot going on. You know, there wasn't really much competition there, but then I guess it sort of, you know, kind of snowballed or whatever happens with squid slime.
Speaking from a Nintendo perspective, Splatoon is secretly enormous in Japan. It sells tens of millions of copies. It's actually kind of absurd how popular it is over there. It's everywhere. And it's obvious to me that Square Enix looked at that and said, well, we should just do that, but we should put it on PlayStation. You know?
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah, I mean, Nintendo Switch is ubiquitous over there, and PS5 is less so. But, I mean, they probably said, well, there's a business case for this. So,
mm-hmm. I mean, the key thing there is that Splatoon, they sell it. It's a game you can physically go out and buy, whereas so many service games are just like, go sign up for the early access beta, and if you're maybe give us $10 and you can have a new hat at launch or whatever. And then, I mean, look at like Multiverses had its beta thing, and then it basically closed up shop, and they're like, we'll be back, and will they? I don't know what's going on there. Let's sort of shift gears here. Speaking of like WB owned competitive things, one that I'm not worried about, I'm not too stressed about, is Mortal Kombat 1. Khalif, are you like a longtime Mortal Kombat guy? It looks like you have is that a throw rug?
I do. I have an MK logo throw rug behind me for folks who are watching the video version of stuff. Yeah, I'm a huge MK fan. And one, seeing that MK1 was now going to be a thing after waiting for Another Realm to talk about their latest kind of iteration of the universe and the game, had me super excited before I got a chance to get hands-on with it. But then when I got hands-on with it, it was just the thing that I want the most at this point. I'm biding my time by playing Street Fighter 6 right now and waiting for MK1 to drop, because what they're doing from a visual perspective is really fresh and new. Just feels like really bright and vibrant in a way that is kind of changing the way you think about Mortal Kombat from an aesthetic perspective. You know, they've leveled up what they do from a just like character animation perspective as well. Looks really, really fantastic. And then the cameo system that they've implemented, which I think is changing the way we think about Mortal Kombat from a fundamental gameplay perspective, is just going to be really brilliant. Like I was talking about this in my post SGF content, was saying like this Mortal Kombat is going to be the swaggiest of all of the Mortal Kombats. It is going to be the one where people, when you watch this at a big fighting game competition like Evo that's coming up pretty soon, is going to just have the crowd wild every turn. I think, you know, having these new assist characters come in that you knew and love from being within the games, and then them being everything from a combo extender to an air juggle component to something that'll break up throws, it just changes up so many different ways that you are thinking about the way you can play Mortal Kombat. And it's just going to be really cool to see not only how some of the best players learn how to use these kind of assists and kind of, you know, implement them within their gameplay, but then who are those assist characters going to wind up being? I know they talked about, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme being a skin for Johnny Cage, but who are going to be, you know, the new combatants that are going to come in, and who are the old folks that are going to come back as new characters or combo characters? I am just infinitely excited for that, and after getting a chance to play it just made my hype levels just grow even more. So I'm ready and I'm waiting for that bad boy to come out.
Yeah, this game, Mortal Kombat is such a known quantity, but at the same time this one really managed to pique my interest, and the fact that it's a reboot helps, but it does feel like it got a kind of a refresh visually, and I can't really put my finger on what exactly about it is that. I think it's a lot brighter. Like it feels like it's a lot more
cartoony, colorful. Maybe.
Yeah. But it's cartoony, but it's got, I feel like, more realism in different areas, if that makes sense. Like the costumes look more like real costumes. Like Sonya Blade's outfit looks like a photorealistic version of her outfit from the first game, which isn't particularly something that someone would actually wear, but it works. It totally looks right. And I mean, same with Kate, and none of the physical fatalities or the things that actually, I mean, I feel like the bone structure and general logic of how human bodies work in those games, that's not even up for discussion. That is not realistic by a long shot. But I don't know. I love that when the assists come in, when the cameos come in, I love that they just run, and it's not like a super cool run. It like looks like a stagehand or like a roadie coming out to swap guitars. Like it's just this, and it has the same kind of dorky run that like the old Mortal Kombat games had when somebody would run, where it's like they're just this little jog, and it's something really charming about that for me, which I'm into. The thing that stuck out for me, the one little detail in that whole demo, which is exactly how weird my brain is, in the character select screen, Kano just like casually blows a snuff rocket.
Yes.
And I'm like, that's Kano. That's my uh-huh. guy. That's Kano being himself. He sucks. He's a jerk. He's terrible. He's a horrible, yeah. disgusting man. And I love it. I'm totally there for it.
They're pulling in all of those layers, though. And I love that you kind of brought that up, because it does feel like in this reboot from a canon perspective that they are looking at all of the things that made those characters iconic, rather than adding that little extra layer of special sauce to kind of flip the canon in ways that we haven't seen yet. So I'm excited to see what they're going to land on the campaign stuff, because they've done that extremely well over the past couple of games. And now we get a chance to see like how they flipped those things on its head, and Kano was still a jerk. So those things are consistent across the universe.
I love it. Kat, do you have any strong feelings about Mortal Kombat?
The thing that I find interesting about Mortal Kombat is that it's kind of the fighting game for the people. So often it comes out, it sells really, really well. There's a lot of hype around it. People play through the actually really excellent single player campaign. I think that's where it really stands out, is that frequently it has just a better single player campaign than virtually any fighting game that is out there. But then Mortal Kombat frequently struggles to have staying power at the major fighting game events. So this is going to be, so when it comes out and it's at the next Evo, it's going to be an interesting test. So obviously it won't be out this summer, but maybe next year. It'll be an interesting test to see whether it has a lot more staying power, because it has a really dedicated community. People absolutely love Mortal Kombat. But what always stands out to me is it's a little bit like the Call of Duty of fighting games in a way, in that there is a huge contingent of people who just buy it, play through the campaign, maybe play with their friends and go, wow, that was a lot of fun. Ooh. And then move on with their lives. On the flip side, as Khalif was saying, there's a whole podcast dedicated to Mortal Kombat lore. So this rabbit hole goes deep, so to speak.
No, that's a really interesting point, because like, yeah, so many fighting games do kind of live and die by the hardcore, like, you know, fighting game scene. And I don't know. I feel like Mortal Kombat manages to kind of capture other corners of that, whether it's the sort of the casual player or the people who are there for like the kind of, you know, the lore, the story.
Yeah.
Ben, is Mortal
fighting
Kombat
games are known for not being accessible, and maybe Mortal Kombat does that better than a lot of fighting games. So I think it's kind of respected.
They've always
that.
Been good about, like, to the point that they're fun to watch. Like, they've been very good about reward, like letting you get a little treat, even if you suck. Like, even if you're really bad at the game, you can, like, I don't know. I always love that the X-ray moves are like pretty easy to pull off. And like, I feel like that you can do some really neat stuff with the cameos that aren't going to be, you know, it's going to be fun to look at without, you know, and some people are looking at like frame data, and like, that's the thrill for them is like very granular, like, you know, extremely hardcore information that average mortals can't comprehend, but like, I don't know, it works on two levels. And I think that's cool. Ben, Mortal Kombat thoughts?
Yeah, no, look, I'm not necessarily like a fighting game guy in the way that you speak of it in regards to competition and everything like that. So I am all in on the Mortal Kombat franchise, as if from Mortal Kombat 11. Now we get rid of one of those ones and we'll go back to Mortal Kombat 1. And this is really feels more like not, it doesn't stay as close to those fighting game traditions where it is built around that competition, rather than it feels like a AAA single player game so much of the time. And where that's where it's elevated through the story, through its cinematics. And I can't wait to play the single player campaign of this game and getting all those fatalities and getting those cutscenes. I remember, you know, the classic like PS1 days of like Tekken, fighting all my way to the end just to get that cutscene. That's what I wanted. That's all I wanted. I just wanted the cutscene. I wasn't good enough in the fighting game. I just need to get through. And this just gives you all the cutscene, tells a really compelling story. And so for not a fighting game fan like me, I cannot wait to play and see what it's all about and just feel that just gruesome blood just kind of dripping down the screen. I want it all. Thank you very much.
I'm into it. Let's talk Diablo 4. We haven't really touched on that on the regular show as far as I know, but a couple of you were playing that. Kat, you were just telling us about that before we started recording. What's up with Diablo 4? How are we feeling on that now that the kind of the dust has settled post launch on some of that?
Yeah. So for context, my background with Diablo is I kind of got started with Diablo 3 actually, and I played through that game. Multiple different characters, really enjoyed Reaper of Souls. And then I played the Diablo 2 remaster, and now I'm here in Diablo 4. And it's, the contrast is really striking with Diablo 4. It is a really kind of bloody, horrifying, very kind of grim RPG, especially compared to Diablo 3, which had, I know people criticize the art style. I thought it was mostly fine, but it was a lot more aligned with World of Warcraft than I think Diablo 4 is. And I'm digging it, honestly. I think it has a great personality in that regard. Also, it's beautiful. It is a beautiful game. I'm playing on PC, actually. Sorry, PlayStation podcasters. And it looks absolutely fantastic on there. I love that it has crossplay. I'm actually going to be firing up a co-op game tonight, and I'm going to be rolling up a druid, to be playing with a couple of my friends who are playing on console. And it's been really striking to me to watch Diablo 4. When it was coming out around this year, I was like, yeah, Diablo 4, it's also one of those games. And it's quickly become, I would say, the biggest game of the summer. And I think that Blizzard, honestly, while there are definite community gripes about how they're handling nerfing, XP grinding, and everything like that, Blizzard has mostly done a pretty good job of making sure that this launch has been relatively smooth. Certainly compared to Diablo 3, where it became a whole meme about how all the servers weren't working. They had to do wholesale changes to many of the kind of touted features, like the real-life auction house. And just out of the gate, Diablo 4 seems exponentially more better thought out. The launch has been so much smoother, and there's obviously plenty to work out, but I've been really, really enjoying my time with it. Playing a barbarian, level 12 right now, and firing up another character really soon.
Sweet. Khalif, are you playing Diablo at all?
Yeah, and ditto to everything that Kat shared. I think this is my first real Diablo. I played a little bit of Diablo 3, but didn't really dig my feet into the sands there. But now this is taking over my life. I used to know what sunlight looks like. I don't know what it looks like anymore. I don't know what to do with my life besides wake up and think about how can I min-max my barbarian that I'm playing with currently.
But you're playing
and
a barbarian too.
Oh, barbarians, yeah,
are fun.
Oh yeah.
You got it. It's
barbarians are really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorcerers, you all suck. I see all you out there.
Sorcerers are barbarians, I guess. And rogue. Rogue's popular too.
Yeah, rogue is super fun. I was going to roll a rogue at first and then saw some really cool powers on the barbarian tree and started to roll that way. I'm currently 63 or something like that in my run, but dang. I think it's been something that I think is like my go to bed game now. I usually have one of those per season. You know, it used to be, you know, predecessor on the MOBA side, but now it's kind of been Diablo, and I'm just having so much fun with it. Like, again, as a person who hadn't really like dug into the systems and all of those layers before, now kind of having an understanding of what I'm trying to do and that I'm playing kind of in that late game space, it now feels like I am trying to do the numbers game part of it that I know so many folks really, really love in these spaces. And that part, although, you know, frustrating at times because you're just like waiting for that god roll to hit. You're just waiting for that piece of loot to drop. I understand the addiction in a way that I didn't know before. And to get to that level, Blizzard has just dropped a really fantastic campaign. I think that's the thing that has been sticking with me when playing with other folks who haven't gotten to that past 50 level and going back through some of the content with them to level them up has been to see just how beautiful and smart and interesting the character of Lilith has become or is, you know, how that is kind of infusing itself into where you're thinking about your character and kind of the minions of darkness that you're playing through in this kind of grim dark fantasy space. And it just feels really good to feel like you can just go into a room and just decimate everything that's in that space. That when you get to that level, it feels really, really cool. So I'm just digging it, and I'm just lost so many hours at this point to this game. It's really fun.
You have to love the people who've rolled up hardcore characters and have accidentally lost them to server outages. Uh-oh.
Oh, it hurts. That's the worst thing ever. Ben, are you playing Diablo?
I'm still trying to figure that out.
Yeah. I've only just scratched the surface. I'm like only like a level 10. I am a rogue and I'm having a lot of fun. Gorgeous game, because this is also my first Diablo. So I'm like very, I'm trying to figure out exactly where my place will be in the series. Because generally, again, not having any Diablo experience, I don't know if it's going to be long-term a game for me. I don't know if I am going to push upwards, you know, get to the level 50s and beyond. But I'm right now I'm having fun, but I really want to play it with other people. That's going to be where the fun clicks in for me. All I can say is, like, this is a really well put together game. Will it be for me? Only time will tell.
It's daunting. It's a pretty massive thing. You've been traveling and meandering, and really, I really want to mess with this, but I'm also kind of scared about how deep and addicting I know it is. You know, like, it's one of those, like, do I want to try freebasing? Do I want to get into that? I don't know. Is that a good idea?
They say once you try crack once.
Yeah. What could go wrong? You know, I don't know, but it's fascinating to me how many of you, I mean, all of you, this is like your first real Diablo experience, with all due respect to Diablo 3, but I always hated how, like, candy coated that was, and how
hilarious.
I love the original Diablo 2. It's so gnarly. Like, it's such a wonderfully, like, dark fantasy. Like, just, I love how metal it is. And then I remember sort of just trying to be like, hey, 3, all right.
Not only that, but Diablo 2 is probably one of the most influential RPGs ever made. Because it gave us so much of what we associate with RPGs these days. So skill trees kind of came out of the Diablo series. They were appropriated from strategy games and turned into a Diablo thing. Socketed items, just color-coded loot, which became even more popularized by World of Warcraft. And then there is a Diablo popularized basically this flavor of RPG. And there are a lot of RPG fans. There's a certain class of RPG fans to this day who kind of grumble and go, oh, Diablo, it's not really an RPG, et cetera, et cetera. But you just can't deny the appeal of playing in real time. That was the big thing in the mid-90s. And being able to kind of min-max your character to the point where they're destroying entire rooms of enemies, it's turned out to be a timeless formula.
It's Gauntlet with a PhD. Like, it's... I feel like arcadey at its core, but it's got, like, that if you really want to get into the RPG side of it, and, like, the min maxing and the stats and the items and all that and the loot, and
we were talking about SGF. I mean, Path of Exile 2 was also shown very briefly during Summer Game Fest, and it's going to be really interesting to see, because Path of Exile kind of rose up on the back of Diablo 3 being disappointing. Can Path of Exile 2 be a real competitor to Diablo 4. I think competition's good, so I'm excited to see what comes of that.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn, because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good stuff. Now, going back to the gaming announcement side of things, I want to touch on this briefly because I don't want to be a pessimist. I don't want to be a downer, but I feel like this was really pretty kind of an embarrassing showing for Sony this year. You know, they had that big Sony showcase, and I think myself and the regular cast, we were pretty amped about it when we kind of came out of it. And I think that was just sort of, yes, there's things to talk about. There are games getting announced and stuff. But in hindsight, we're like, oh, that was a lot of stuff that's also, you know, it's cross-platform. There was a very small first party showing in that particular showcase. There was a big hardware reveal for the Project Q, which feels like it's not quite there yet. And I don't know if there is a place anyone wants to go. Naughty Dog's big summer announcement is that the multiplayer Last of Us is they're simultaneously getting back to work on it, but also work like devoting less. It's just not great. The PlayStation VR, which apparently is selling better than the previous iteration, you know, comparatively speaking, hasn't gotten really any first party like reveals. Like they had their big showcase, which would be a good place to maybe be like, hey, here's Astrobot's divorce cruise or whatever. I don't know what his next adventure is, but something big like that. And it was a bunch of third party games for PS4, which is cool and everything. But at the same time, it's like, okay, well, how is Sony supporting its own hardware? That's kind of wild. You know, obviously we have the big, huge, I think the biggest PSVR 2 thing on the way is, you know, RE4 VR. Like that's the biggest sort of AAA known quantity. And even that is like, we got a showing for that just recently at Capcom's thing. And it was like the same footage. And it's like, so even when we're getting like third party support on a third party stream, it's like kind of lackluster. And then Sony's like dropping announcements here and there on the blog. They're basically burying them. They announced a couple of new PSVR games, but it's like, why didn't you just take the PSVR stuff out of that showcase and give it its own little, showcase or state of play or whatever. We got our first look at Destiny's next, or not Destiny, Bungie's first new project under Sony. And it's cross-platform, which is great for everybody. But at the same time, I think it's kind of, I don't know. And it was a CG trailer. Like it was sort of this kind of like lackluster announcement. But the sort of punchline to all this, though, is that Sony's like in first place console sales wise. So maybe that's the way to go about it. Like, am I crazy here? What did you all think of this, of sort of how Sony's been showcasing everything this year? Khalif, I want to hear your thoughts.
It's hard because it's like, if you have to do the hindsight version of it, right? It's like, having seen something that was really well produced in the Xbox showcase that really just nailed all the things that were pacing, content, all of those things, it makes you go back and look at that Sony showcase and say, man, the ball was dropped here. Like there was a space to really like do the 360 dunk on your competition, and they didn't do it because they went first. And it feels like that ability to kind of go first and not have everything kind of be in that space exactly when you needed it to be there, both from a we're ready to show it and we're ready to talk about it conversation, just put them in a really weird spot. Like there were some interesting, you know, games that got shown within that in that showcase, like Neva and a bunch of other games.
Foam Stars.
But
I love Foam Stars. Foam Stars. Yeah.
Game of the year. Foam Stars.
Game of the year. But it just felt, it feels like the thing that Sony does really, really well from a marketing perspective, it feels like they have missed a couple of beats here and there about what is a player who's excited in your ecosystem want to know about. They want to know about dates. They want to know about gameplay. They want to know about when they can touch a thing and when they're going to be able to see something new that's going to really showcase the power of the machine that they wind up purchasing. And games like Teardown, as much as I love them and they're really cool, that's not the game that I want to see to be the thing that's going to get me to talk about, hey, I'm going to be able to play this with my friends at X date and say, hey, are we going to squad up and do this or what? They just didn't nail that part of the equation in the conversation. And I think the games that we know we're going to do really, really well, we know they're going to do well. Final Fantasy, we know, is going to be in that conversation in a big way. But the other stuff that they could have pulled out of their bag, or, you know, that one more thing. The one more thing was a device that no one is going to buy.
the one more thing was 15 minutes of Spider-Man, which looks awesome. But then we were all like, release date, release date, release date. And it was like fall. And we're like, okay. And then they saved that for Keeley's thing, which just, I don't know. That was obviously someone drove
have a little bone dump truck Keeley. Here you go.
Yeah.
Even that though, right, is like, we also know that like Insomniac doesn't miss, so like that's not a surprise for anyone who's in the PlayStation ecosystem. They already knew that that game was coming, and we all know that that game is going to be good. It's going to, the question they could have answered there is like, does this game do something again different on the hardware that is something that you haven't seen before? And if you look at that game, the answer is, for me at least, not really. Like, I think it looks fantastic. It's going to have that sparkle and that polish that we already know Insomniac puts on their games. But there wasn't anything within even that sequence that I was like, holy crap, this is the reason why I have purchased this machine. And this is the thing that it's doing from an OS perspective, from a gameplay perspective, from a new DualSense Elite controller perspective. Like, there are so many things that are in that PlayStation ecosystem that I think is really important that they could be showing across PlayStation VR and the hardware. We're just not seeing that yet. And I don't know if that's a problem with the games, or if that's a problem with things just not being ready yet. Right. So we'll see. I think there's going to be a part of that conversation that we really need to dig into.
Kat, what do you think about Sony's presence this summer?
I think people need to chill the heck out about this. Seriously. I mean, if I'm looking at the upcoming schedule for the PlayStation 5, we've got Spider-Man coming out in September, and that's obviously going to sell a zillion units. And there's going to be all of the major third-party tentpoles. People are going to be playing their FIFAs and their Call of Duties. They haven't shown Call of Duty, really, but we know that we're basically getting another Modern Warfare. And
they could have shown it on Sony's beyond thing. I'm just saying, maybe they could have shown that off. That would have been a cool reveal. I don't really care about Call of Duty.
Okay, I'll get to the parts that I think Sony probably is causing a little bit of alarm in a second. Like, looking ahead, like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, that's a pretty solid exclusive coming up early next year. Like, the cadence of games coming to PlayStation 5 is pretty solid. Where I would worry as a PlayStation fan is that there was a lot of games as a service in this particular showcase. From Jade Raymond's game that was shown at the very beginning, which frankly I did not think looked very good, to Marathon, which is a huge bummer that one of the best single player FPSs ever is being turned into a games of service. That's too bad. And I think that there was a decent number of people who were like, well, show me a new single player prestige game from a Sony first party studio that I can be excited about. And frankly, even a thing like Ghost of Tsushima 2, I think would have gotten people going, okay, yeah. And like, I get it that people are going, hey, like, it's been a while since we've had a showcase and we want to see what's going to be happening into the next year and beyond. Get me excited about owning this thing, because frankly, this generation hasn't been much so far. But I have to say, like, the doomsaying about Sony going into the next year, the PS5 is... frankly, it's doing incredibly. And in the short term, the games are there. Talk to me next spring.
Exactly. Like, it's they're doing fine. They're doing great. So there's not really any reason to like criticize this. But as you know, as someone who has to make a PlayStation show every week, it is a little frustrating that if you give someone a really crappy gift that's obviously phoned in, it's worse than no gift at all. Like, that's kind of what the showcase felt. It's like, hey, man, I got you half a sleeve of Oreos for your birthday. You're like, thanks, I think. Wow. Like,
here are these socks.
I got you a five-pack of Mike's Hard Lemonade. I drank one on the way over. You're like, all right.
I'm a Nintendo fan. I know about software gaps, I just have to say.
Yeah.
Can I jump in on that last point that Kat had really quick about the games of service part? And I agree with you, Kat. I think the Sony's doing well in terms of what the expectations are, what we're going to get delivered from that conversation. I think the thing that Sony fans and every fan at this point in the gaming space is really thinking about is we do have a deluge of games that are dropping all the time. And I feel like the conversations between what is a game of service and that also now just being automatically kind of given a negative tone from a lot of players, which I think is a re education moment for the gaming industry to try to figure out good ways to talk about games as services as a benefit for players and then showcase them and prove that out, which I think is still in the mix. But I do think that, like, for Sony, there were some missed potential opportunities there. Like, could we get an update on Wolverine? Could we get an update on some other games that we knew were in the ecosystem? Because we know stuff is going to drop end of this year, beginning of next, and middle of next year. I think the things that people are still trying to figure out for themselves is to say, past all those things that we already know are going to be known entities, we still do want that little bit of icing on the cake to figure out, like, what's the future of the platform going to look like in a way? Because I don't think Sony has done that. It hasn't really broached that conversation well yet. There's a lot of pieces to that puzzle that they've dropped with VR, and I'm excited that they're continuing to do VR, and they're continuing to put out interesting hardware, both on the accessibility space and on the controller space with DualSense. But I do still think that there's a conversation there that is still to be had from the PlayStation platform that's like, consistently, what are you going to get? Where are the places that's going to be? There's a layer of that conversation that's still in that mix of, like, what does PlayStation Plus bring to all of this, and how do we actually market this in a way that's compelling and doesn't feel like it's kind of, you know, just thrown out there. There's a lot of still weird unspoken and unfigured out kind of layers to that ecosystem that I think would be great to have clarification on from the platform. Mm-hmm. That's
a little communication would be nice. Ben, are we being too pessimistic? Am I being too pessimistic? What do you think?
No, I think, look, it feels like to me this was a presentation written by an algorithm to be the most kind of functional presentation to show you just enough games, just enough variations of different genres of games so that it kind of appeals to everyone. I think the biggest confusions are around the PSVR 2 and all the VR games that they showcased all looked very similar. You know, they're all... Everyone has a gun in their hand. There's no VR experience where nobody's holding a gun, which is, you know, I will take a bow and arrow. Give me another Horizon Call of the Mountain. And then the hardware reveal, which, again, last time I was on Beyond, I went pretty hard on Project Q for being the weirdest device for an audience that doesn't exist. Why even reveal it? I don't know what the thinking was behind that. Is it just like, just throw it out and see if anybody shows any interest and then we'll kind of tweak it to become what people want? If you want a Steam Deck competitor, or if that's what you're going for, you know, if that's what you want to be, or if you just want a little device that people carry around their home and take to bed, all right, that's fine.
It's more like a backbone competitor.
But it also makes up for that too. You can get the PlayStation controllers for the backbone as well. Like, I don't know. It was just bizarre, but I don't think they needed to do any more. And I know there were rumors that came out, you know, that there are bigger games that they have in their arsenal that they were ready to show that they just chose not to. And they are rumors. Mm-hmm. But these presentations, this isn't an E3 presentation. You don't have to fly people out. There's no putting on stage. You have to build the presentation itself. But the millions of dollars it costs to, like, put on an E3 presentation, they could do another one later in the year. I know I'm optimistic. I said last time I was on, Christmas is when you sell consoles. So if you hit everybody at the end of the year with, oh, you just played Spider-Man, have you heard of all these other games we've got coming down? Merry Christmas to all.
I mean, I'd accept like a big, huge showcase in September. And I think they've done stuff like that before. I feel like we were having these same conversations leading into the launch of the PS5. We're like, can we see it? Where is it? I want to see it. How big is it? And the answer is it's huge. And we eventually saw it. And I think that was like later in the summer kind of thing. So I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I mean, I think there's something to be said for, you know, third party games that have a kind of an association with, you know, with the PlayStation, you know, ecosystem, family, whatever. And it's, I don't know. We got our big Final Fantasy reveal at the end of Jeff Keighley's thing, and you know, business is business. But it was, I don't know. I feel like that could have been a good place to put that.
Can I just say that? Yes, we all cover this for a living, and it's good, you know, when we have something to get excited about and talk about. But the way that the hype engine has become like everything, where people are just like, yeah, these games are coming out, but what's next? I need to know what's coming up next, so that I can look forward to what's coming out in 2024 and 2025. I just want to point out that PlayStation fans are eating right now. Friggin' Diablo 4, Final Fantasy 16, and Street Fighter 6 are coming out right now. And you go, well, so one of those is a third-party exclusive and the other is a multi-plat. Those are all amazing games that you can play.
Don't just tell
play
me them, where people. I can and can't move my goalposts. I want to move them over there. It's easy to kick the goals. Come on.
Come on. Play. There are lots of games out right now.
No, you're 100% right. Like, it is definitely like looking a gift horse in the mouth. I guess it's just sort of weird because everyone's super excited about everything coming out of, you know, like Xbox had a really cool show. And it honestly felt like they understand that there are people who care about that brand. And, you know, to a Devolver did the same thing. And, Summer Game Fest was a little bit weird. Capcom thing was all over the place. Ubisoft had a sea shanty. They're not all perfect, but I feel
Xbox
like, you
needed
know.
Needed a home run. They did.
They badly needed
a home run. PlayStation is is doing fine. Like God of War Ragnarok and Elden Ring were two of the biggest games of last year, and they're in many ways associated with PlayStation.
You know, you're totally right. Maybe we do love PlayStation enough that it can give us half a sleeve of Oreos for our birthday and we won't be mad about it, you know? I guess we'll take it. Now real quick, Kat, I want to hear about Armored Core 6. You are I think you are the big Armored Core fan in the office, and you got a chance to check the game out, right?
Yeah. Well, they had a hands-off demo. They haven't actually been able to show playable yet. I would expect that relatively soon because Armored Core 6 is coming along really fast. And the main takeaways have been, From Software decided to make an Armored Core game. And my takeaway is, From Software decided to make an Armored Core game? Yes. Because, like, I think there's this expectation that From Software is going to make, I don't know, Mech Souls. And it's obvious that Armored Core 6 is borrowing a decent amount from the more recent action games like Sekiro. They have a build-up gauge, basically a stagger gauge, where if you hit enemies long enough, they'll eventually be staggered, and then you can do large amounts of damage. But the things that are the most important to Armored Core, especially the customization, are very much in evidence, and it's obvious that the levels are really, really big. And I think it's pretty cool that you start out on the outside. You're coming in, there's like a little bit of a stealth aspect as you're coming down on the enemies, raining missiles on them and everything, as we're seeing in the B-roll right now. And then you're delving deeper and deeper into this superstructure. There are robots waiting for within, there are ACs to fight. And then you can, if you die, you can change the build of your mech pretty much immediately. It actually seems more forgiving in terms of checkpointing than other Armored Core games. But the thing that you have to understand about Armored Core 6 is that Armored Core has historically been a multiplayer franchise. So going back to Armored Core 2 and Armored Core on the PlayStation 1, those were couch games. They were split screen, play against your friends, build up your mech, try and experiment with different builds. And so I think the thing that we have not seen yet that will be really interesting to see is, what does Armored Core 6 PvP actually look like? Modern Armored Core 6 PvP. Because Armored Core 5 was, it was interesting. It was really experimental. It was maybe too big for what it actually wanted to be. But Armored Core 6 might actually have a user base by comparison. And yeah, so I think that a lot of my questions will be answered once I actually see what the multiplayer looks like.
Well, some of the stuff you said there actually kind of puts my mind at ease, because like the thing I really love about FromSoft is the environments. Like I love exploring those worlds and hearing that they're big environments and there's a lot of verticality and kind of just, you know, nooks and crannies to poke around in. That's good to hear. You know, I don't know. I was for some reason hearing it's like a mission based thing as opposed to sort of an open world experience. I was worried it was going to be like sort of more you get plopped down and you go from point A to point B as fast as you can for the highest possible score or whatever.
The demo that they showed was you start out, you're working your way into the superstructure, and then at the end there's a big boss, the Roomba from hell, with like these big spinning like spikes, and they're trying to hit you and it's spewing lava. And this seemed like an appropriately scaled enemy that you would be fighting in a From Software game. I don't think it's going to win the recently converted Elden Ring fans over to the Armored Core franchise. I don't. At the same time, hey, good job From Software. I'm proud of you for making an Armored Core-ass Armored Core game. Let's go.
Good. Cool. I'm into it. Yeah, so we don't have to wait long for that. That's out, what, like August 25th, which is wild.
Yeah, very soon, actually.
Yeah. No, I really like that turnaround of like announcement to reveal to you know, the release is coming up and there's still stuff we don't know. I feel like that's, you know, that keeps everyone's attention. Speaking of getting people's attention, one thing that probably will jump out at you if you're in Hawaii is a butt naked man with Yakuza tattoos washing up on the beach, which is what the reveal for Yakuza, or I guess Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth is, which is the sequel to Like a Dragon, which is technically the mainline, the ninth Yakuza entry. But it's still, I think, like the best. I think it's maybe the best reveal trailer ever. I keep thinking about this, not because the naked guy, just because the overall sort of presentation, the whole thing. Here's some reasons that I think this is swinging for the fences and totally just deserved. This is the ninth mainline entry in the series. This franchise does not need people's approval. It is doing what it wants to do. And if you're not interested, then go to hell. You know, they're not even trying to impress people. They're just like, yeah, here's a video of a guy on a beach and he's not wearing clothes. Guess what? It's an Austin Powers joke. Yeah. And is the best version of this Austin Powers joke since, I don't know, that original Austin Powers joke. Like, it's just the gag of like, what if there were things in the foreground blocking his genitals? Ha ha ha. Anyway, rinse and repeat. I don't know. I like that. I appreciate that. Definitely following the wonderful tradition of naked guy on a beach that was Death Stranding. You know, I love mm-hmm. I love the confidence of a. I don't even know if that was supposed to be a parody of that, of just, hey, it's a naked guy at a beach causing confusion. Definitely different tone and pacing from Death Stranding. Whatever. That's a very short list of games that do that. It's pretty much those two. These games are actually that weird. I feel like sometimes you get trailers that are super goofy and offbeat, and then you play the actual game and you're like, oh, that was just really good marketing. This is only slightly weird and goofy. These games are absolutely, absolutely bonkers. Kat, you mentioned a Roomba from hell and Armored Core. You literally fight a Roomba the size of a car in the last one. And you can do it using sex toys because these games are completely wackadoo. Also, I don't know a damn thing about this game. I don't know what they're doing with it or where it's going. But that, I feel like that is just what a wonderful, just perfect, like, you know, five course meal of just incoherent themes mixed together. To make something that I don't know, I feel like if anybody saw this trailer and hadn't been paying attention to this series and is suddenly going, hold on now, what's going on here? Congratulations, you have taken your first step into a much larger world, because it was always, I don't know, I always thought Yakuza was just, you know, very serious tough guy stuff. And then I saw a couple trailers where there was like weird, goofy stuff in the margins. And I was like, this is interesting. And it was like the weird gift that popped up on Twitter that sold me on the series, and I fell madly in love with it. So, yeah, I don't know. The Naked Man on the Beach trailer, if it piques your interest, give it a shot. You might enjoy yourself. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
I bet
you that
butt sold at least one more copy of that game. I bet.
Hold on now. This game has butt cheeks in it. Sign me up. Where do I pre-order? Let me see this.
Hey.
If this isn't the exact gameplay, it has to be the intro that leads into you running around looking for pants. That's the game I'm fully on board with.
I wouldn't put it past them. You know, I feel like that is extremely possible. The weird thing is that they had a fully localized English dub. You could typically do it in English or in Japanese audio. This seems like it's going to have both. So if he washes up and you have it in English dub, is he going to be speaking English and everyone in like all the blonde women are just going to be speaking Japanese to him? That's going to be a quandary. Anyway, we'll have to wait and see. I'm dying to know more about this one. Thankfully, it's not coming out this year because enough stuff already is. Anyway, we are about at time here, but I wanted to thank you all so much for joining me. Khalif, where can people find you?
First of all, thank you so much for having me. It's always a blast to be able to rock with y'all and hang out with the Beyond crew and everybody on the PlayStation side of the fence. You can check out my work at Spawn On Me on every podcast platform. We're doing a lot of fun stuff over on Spotify, so go please check that stuff out there. You can check out our Twitch channel where we do our live show, usually every Wednesday around 6 p.m. PST at twitch.tv/spawnonme, and also putting up a lot of our content on our YouTube channel as well, youtube.com/spawnonme is where you can go check out all of that good stuff there. I've been playing a lot of fighting games and playing a lot of MOBAs, and now I'm going to be playing some more Diablo while I try to figure out my character, so please go check out that stuff and more of my work.
Nice. Kat, you're on NVC, IGN's regular Nintendo podcast. You also do, you flexed a little bit of your RPG knowledge here. You also do a podcast on the side called Axe of the Blood God, which I applaud the name right there. Where else can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @_Kappa. And Max, you mentioned that I have an RPG podcast. It's RPG season. We're talking about Diablo 4 and Final Fantasy 16 RPG fans are eating right now. So we're having a great time. But yeah, in the meantime, go check me out on IGN.com. I'm the news wizard, apparently. So there's plenty to cover right now.
And then there's our social media paladin. Ben, you and Jeffrey just had a good time kind of yapping over the recent game stuff. Where can people regularly catch you?
Yeah, well, you can catch my face everywhere. That's IGN is on social media, whether it be TikTok, Instagram, or anywhere else. Or if you can follow me directly, it's Benny Watts everywhere. So there you go.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all for joining me. I'll be back here next week. Who's going to join me? That's anyone's guess. But on that note, beyond. Everyone has to say beyond.
Oh, beyond.
There we go. Perfect. Nailed
it. Getting invited back.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.